and I'm not expecting anybody else. I'm expecting anybody else. So we'll go ahead and get started. And other things to note before we kind of jump in.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
This is the last of this time, right?
Right.
I have to switch.
That's right. So, I will send. I don't know, people here now, are you on Outlook? Is everybody on Outlook for scheduling and like, okay, so would it be helpful for me to do calendar invites through Outlook?
Yeah, if I press yes, it's on.
Okay. So you all may input your own, but I will also send out a calendar invites just for these meetings to maybe help make it a bit
like
easier.
The next
I just always get worried when I
next year, I can do all of
that. Yeah, that's right.
The whole first
okay.
Oh, this okay. thing again.
Okay.
And then you'll all see it. But okay, that's fine.
Good. Okay. So in general, 2018, we're moving to this like Wednesday mornings at 10, right? So that's generally the norm. It's the first Wednesdays, the norm, at 10. I'll send out an email with the schedule again. I'll send out, again, an invite as well. But then, yes, January 3rd is going to be our next meeting. And so that gives us some time. I don't expect, again, this next batch of offenses against persons to be due until probably the end of February. So we've got a couple sessions now to work through the property offense comments and anything on conspiracy too. So I don't think it's super compressed right now over the holidays. I know it's tougher for folks. What else to say? Again, we will move back the due date for the conspiracy comments to Wednesday the 20th. And I think that's it for announcements. Happy birthday to Dave. Dave has a birthday coming up, by the way.
Well, before my birthday.
Uh-oh.
It's Miss Hankins.
What? When is your
tomorrow.
Birthday?
Tomorrow.
You guys
I was going to wish her happy birthday at the end.
Afternoon or before
you?
Mine is the 16th, actually.
That's right. It goes this way across the table.
All three of you are December birthdays. That's.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's
nice. Yeah.
I don't know horoscopes, but, you know, we will run that to, like, figure into our calculations about how we should. Yeah.
We lack tact. That's one of the
is
things.
That right? Is that right?
That's absolutely true. Yes. Carl Racine's also a Sagittarius.
All right.
Oh, no,
he is
just a picture of diplomacy now, yeah. Laura.
Okay.
We are on the record. We are on the record.
Okay.
I will just,
oh, are we? He is the picture of diplomacy.
She repeats Renata.
All right. On that note. All right. Let's turn to conspiracy. And, look, this is incredibly, you know, kind of dense material, right, for a conspiracy. And frankly, you know, again, this doesn't even go into, like, Pinkerton liability, right? Like, it is something I wanted to raise just in terms of how, in practice, Pinkerton works. But, like, you know, this is even kind of, it's just an incredibly complex area of law, period. Maybe particularly since we're pushing back the deadline on this a bit, if you have particular questions, happy to address them now, but also, you know, follow up with a call. Michael's worked lead on this, and, you know, talking with him or with me, like, maybe that'd be helpful, so don't hesitate to do that. But just kind of, you know, first want to open it up. If you have any questions on, yes, where things are now, yeah, go for it.
Okay,
yeah.
So first of all, when I first started reading this, I couldn't. It was so dense. I couldn't do it. I think I was too tired, because when I picked it up again, it was really good. It was really good. Thank you very much. It was very well written. It was really dense and complicated, but it was really well written. So good work. So the first question I have, I think,
yeah.
is just would just be clarifying language, but I want to see if you agree with me, or if you mean something. There's no way you mean anything different.
Right.
So it's in it's B.
Okay.
It's the any result or circumstance, which kind of sounds like you only have to do one.
No, any.
As opposed to any result.
That's right.
And any circumstance required, right?
That's right. I mean, so it's at least theoretically possible that an offense could have a could be a circumstance without a result. So it's
But you can't pick and choose what.
No, exactly.
Result
that's right.
A circumstance.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's right.
I'm sorry. I thought I understood what you
meant. Yeah, so
if there is a result and circumstance in the offense,
they would all have to be intended.
Okay.
That's right. For someone to be convicted of a conspiracy to commit an offense that is comprised of a result, then there must be intent as the result and circumstance, or it have to be intent as to both. In other words, it is applying a minimum level of mens rea elevation set at intent as to results and circumstances.
But it's any, not all.
That's right.
Because result could be serious bodily injury or death.
That's right.
And you don't.
That's
so
right.
You just have to do one.
That's right.
But it's any result and any circumstance.
Yes, but
does that
given that some
difference, because that's what I would say.
No, that's okay. Yeah,
yeah, that's, no. Assuming that they would have. I mean, that's
well, any
that's,
any result and any circumstance required, right? Any result
right.
required and any circumstance required by that
okay.
offense.
Yeah.
So right, if it's
right.
There is not.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's. I think it's
okay. Okay.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then, my second thing had to do with jurisdiction. This.
Oh yeah, I got one of those.
You got one of those. Okay, and that is. I'm not, and that is whether the agreement reaches to doing the conduct in D.C.
Whether the agreement. Out,
so right outside D.
Okay.
So here was the example. I'm not sure it totally works, but
sure.
but here's what Kutch and I were talking about. So there are a few assumptions that go into this.
Right.
Maryland's drinking age is now 18.
Okay.
Kutch is 19, and I am 21.
Oh dear.
Okay, I know.
Wait. Maryland's drinking age is 18.
19, 21.
Got it.
DC is
21.
21.
Okay.
We are on the Maryland side of the line. We pull into the parking lot and we say, okay, Katja, you go and get the chips and the salsa in this grocery store. I see a liquor store across the street. I'm going to run over there and I'm going to get the beer. And she says, great, here's my money. You go get the beer. I'll meet you back here.
Wait a minute. So the street is the boundary between
yes.
Maryland and D.C.
Right.
And the 21-year-old who's legal in
that's me.
Maryland,
I'm the older one.
You're the older one.
And you're going
one.
To get
you
the
go,
beer.
I'm going to get the beer.
In D.C. And you're 19.
Yes.
And
you're
it's illegal for you to get it in Maryland?
In D.C. No,
D.C.
Maryland's now 18.
You're okay,
what we're doing,
as long as you stay
right.
on that side of the street.
Right.
But then you're
but
gonna
once
move
I,
that
when
car.
I say, oh, there's a liquor store.
Right.
And I'll run across the street to the liquor store. I'll meet you right back here. I'll just, you know, I don't get to sell the beer in this grocery store. I'm just going
right,
to,
so
there's
you
a liquor store.
Across,
I'm going to cross.
In D.C.
But I don't. I mean, I may not even realize I've crossed the street, right? Like that I know I've crossed the street, but like that I've crossed the border.
Well, this is obtaining liquor for a minor.
Right, exactly.
It's not my offense.
I had a different example.
I might get on the crime, but have we committed a conspiracy? Has either one of us come to an agreement? Have we conspired in Maryland to do something that would be completely illegal where we were standing? And I did happen to go to D.C., but like, but there's no agreement of like, then you shall go to D.C. and buy my beer.
So just understand, the agreement was reached in Maryland.
Yes.
We're talking about whether or not you could be prosecuted in D.C.
For conspiracy. I couldn't be. There's no crime in Maryland.
Conspiracy. Sorry, the drinking age is 20. 21 in D.C.
Right.
And
I have bought beer for a minor.
You have bought beer for a minor
who's
under
still in Maryland.
Yeah.
But you're in D.C.
Yes.
intending to give it to her.
Yes.
In Maryland.
And that was our agreement that I would buy beer for us.
But it's legal in Maryland.
Not a crime. Yep. But the harder part is if you send her across the street. Right?
Well, that's sort of my
then
example.
That's the next.
Yeah. My example was going
to
be.
Wait, it's not a crime for me to buy beer for. Okay, fine. She goes across the street. Have
yep.
we conspired? I'm
so
less trying, less trying to not be.
Getting the beer for herself?
No,
for
both of you.
For both of us.
And
so
you've agreed that she is going to go get beer.
And you supplied
why
her money.
Why is
so
not a crime under Laura's version?
I think we should address them both. Like, I think they're both legitimate questions.
Yes.
And I have a third variation.
Oh, boy. All right.
So I'm still not. Yeah.
I just make sure I have the facts. Who's older? That's a minor.
I'm assuming it is a crime to buy alcohol for a, to purchase alcohol right. for a minor.
Contra,
which I have agreed to do.
And has Contra the minor
not
cost
if she's giving it to a Maryland where it's legal.
But that's really, not, I could do that now.
But it's
yeah.
But
you're state. Not breaking any D.C. law. Sure. You're breaching letter. You're not giving it to a minor in D.C.
Okay, so then I'm not a problem.
That's right. That's why.
Right.
The crime is committed.
To Las Vegas and then drive outside of the city limits and engage in a sex worker for some transaction, right? Your intent to do that with another person doesn't matter.
That's right.
You actually
no, the next level.
In the
alcohol, buying alcohol, we're doing that. Then we have to go to Vegas.
Like, I'm just trying to stretch it.
Okay, okay.
See, like,
okay.
You know,
so we reach an agreement. Katja goes across the street.
There.
Now, she's your agreement is she's going to illegally purchase in the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
That sounds like conspiracy.
And there's a jurisdictional
Why?
Issue there.
What's that?
Right.
Because your agreement
was in Maryland.
Right. The agreement was in Maryland, but as under Section D.
That's C.
Agree.
But C is easier.
In another jurisdiction, and it's still going to be a problem if the conduct to which you agree would constitute an offense
right.
over here in D.C., and now the overt act
that's
is
right.
happening
that's
also
right.
yeah. in D.C.
That's right. Yeah.
So we're agreeing. So
for the
yeah.
record, Laura is the only one shaking her head.
Yeah.
Right?
Wait,
seriously.
So you both conspired in Maryland
to break
these
laws.
To break
but
these
we
laws.
Didn't.
You did, because you agreed that a minor was going to purchase liquor in D.C., which is illegal.
Right.
We reached across the street. Or how about
yeah.
we just agree she's going to do it and she goes and crosses the street?
Now, if she doesn't
you
know
the meeting in a mind.
She doesn't
yeah.
know.
She may not
she
know.
She has no idea.
But
let's just say
but then
she
you don't
knows.
Have the meeting
let's
in a mind.
Because this
these.
Is, okay, so this
what
we're
point.
Really talking about
yes,
is
we say, look,
right
there's a liquor store across
where
the street.
You conspire, like, we are going to get done. And you live in Virginia, I live in D.C., you live in Maryland, and you live in Pennsylvania.
Vegas.
Done travels, but we don't get him. So we will get him where we find him. So if murder happens to have been decriminalized in other places, if we find him in a place where murder is, then it's murder, right?
So
right? Isn't that how it works out? You conspire in
right,
a place and you find the victim, the decedent in another.
But our conspiracy presumably
is
illegal where we made the conspiracy. Koch and I made a plan where it was completely legal. We pull into
right,
the
so what I'm trying to do is take it to murder when we know it.
But
in
let's
all
stick with the alcohol because this
is
actually very common, right? It's also true that people leave a jurisdiction,
to
as
go
I
get
did
the
when
stuff.
I was grandfathered in as a minor into Vermont. Where the drinking age was, I think, 16.
How far
right.
did you have to travel?
Oh, we drove hours. So, like,
and
go get alcohol.
And that's exactly
and then drive
the
back.
Concern that people have when
right.
they decriminalize marijuana, right? They were like, right. well, the
right.
next jurisdiction over now
right.
is concerned because that's
and
the behavior
get on
we're
airplanes.
Talking about.
So,
yeah.
Okay, so let me, so here's, so different scenarios, because I can't remember. I was not guilty. Okay, so. Katja and I, one side of the line, we pull into the parking lot. I say, I'm running into the store to get the chips and salsa. Here's my half of the money. You get the beer. And that's as far as we go. And she
and
says,
she goes
great.
To DC
and she looks around and she says, oh, there's a liquor store. And she runs across the street
well, that's,
to the liquor store and buys the beer.
Different.
She may have purchased it illegally. Sounds like she did, because she's 19.
But you didn't necessarily agree that she would buy it in a place that would be illegal. You just said, here's money, go buy.
So
maybe
non-conspiracy.
You thought she was going up
well,
the
but wait a minute. First of all, you didn't even know
street.
She was a minor. Because under, right, whether or not someone qualifies as a minor is like a legal status, right? And so, like, to know that you might have known that she was a minor in Maryland, but you wouldn't have known that she was a minor under
wait,
D.C. law.
I know she's 19.
But let's assume she does.
Wait,
let's make it a
wait,
easy.
No, wait, but I don't, wait, what? Do I have to know D.C.'s, part
no.
of the stress on we don't realize we're in D.C.?
Yeah, so one thing I'd say is there's a question about, like, knowledge of the law and when is
right.
knowledge of the law required, which is not addressed here. And that's just a general outstanding question. Whether or not one person acts by themselves to go buy alcohol in one place or another raises the same sort of issue. So, but that's just a that's just like a general principle question. What you're trying to get at right now is not that that you're trying to get at the jurisdictional.
What I'm trying to get at is I think we have no mental state when it comes to jurisdiction. So when when you otherwise are raising mental states and applying
that's
it
right.
all over the place,
yeah.
you aren't doing that with jurisdiction.
That's right.
But we have zero plan. I don't know. Jurisdiction isn't part of it. It's not like, here's our plan. How about you go do it at on Constitution Avenue, you know, Northwest? There's no plan that she do it in D.C. Do reach a plan. She happens to go do it in D.C. Am I guilty of conspiracy?
It's a nice exercise because you could have, you could park on either side of the border and have either one of you cross to either side, right? So there are really four scenarios where you are agreeing to do something that is potentially illegal in the district. And the question is, when are you forming a conspiracy that
right.
is punishable? Because you could be on either side of the line of the border and send one or the other person back over. Now, if you're in the district and you're planning to send a minor over to Maryland to purchase,
right.
or you yourself go
oh,
over
right.
to purchase and then come back, those are two other scenarios, right? So it'd be helpful to have those kind of spelled out
sure.
if it goes to.
And now let me give you mine, which is a little different.
But I still want it to come out my way. I don't just spell it out.
But I'm trying to say.
Okay,
well,
let's hear Dave's
with
scenario.
The interplay because in our general, you know what I'm trying to say. In our definition, isn't that that?
The general part.
Yeah, the general,
general part. The way we've approached it is that there is no. We toggle on and off for mental states for everything, just about all the elements, but not for jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Right.
We have, and I'm not aware of any, Michael, correct
yeah.
me, but that jurisdiction, it isn't typically treated
as an element.
Right?
It's
one of these, like, oh, yeah, it's painful. It is an element
it's an element in the sense that the government has to prove
it.
But it's not
element that has
that's
to be
right.
proven each time. So again, it's this whole kind of issue of like,
but
once it comes into play.
But it's only
wait,
a crime.
But just to be clear, Laura, I think Laura, you're the crux of your questions though aren't actually jurisdictional questions. They're mens rea questions, and they're about blameworthiness, right? Like so, that's. What you're really getting at is whether and to what extent
I'm agreeing to how the conduct is carried out, right?
Yeah.
No, but I mean if I understand.
There's a liquor store walk this way, and there's a liquor store across the street.
Right.
And I say you go get the beer.
Yeah.
So she could go this way, and we'd be fine.
Yeah.
She could cross the street,
yeah.
and she's. Bought alcohol as it's not a crime for her to buy alcohol as a minor.
It's like,
anyway,
it's
what's
like
your date scenario?
What the agreement was or was not.
That's right.
It's like because in my name, when we all agree murder is going to be illegal everywhere,
that's right.
then you're going to get to something like this. Well, what we really agree to is not exactly murder, but we say
yeah.
Don Brayman wants to do X. Stop him from doing X. I think I just mean. Hold him up and distract him. Somebody else thinks I mean.
Well, no one really of this bad.
Cripple him and you know kidnap him and hobble him in their house. And Dave goes and shoots him in the head.
Henry II.
So you know.
right.
So what was so that's like what was the agreement?
This troublesome law professor.
That's right. And I think you know again it's like look every offense we say it has lots of elements. That's not how normal people. Speak or criminals, right? Like if you're conspiring to do something, it's conduct in an often more vague way, right? So jurisdiction was not discussed, right? There was no in this agreement who's going to buy what. You didn't care. You didn't know, maybe, okay? You didn't know what the law was also, right? Like these are all different ways in which it wasn't discussed. You didn't know, but... You formed the intent to do this kind of generalized conduct, buying it somewhere here nearby, and you probably know that we're close to the line of, you know, D.C. and Maryland. Is that sufficient? And again, jurisdiction is kind of funky because it's a kind of a very unusual,
At times we consider it an element. At times we don't. It's Michael, I don't know what you're
No, no. I mean, yeah.
We need to look at it more.
Yeah, I mean, we'll take a look at it. My sense, based upon your...
Let's hear Dave's.
Mine's actually more jurisdictional.
Okay.
Right.
So the hypo that I was going to give you guys is we're going to do a major drug deal in Maryland. We're in Maryland. And I say, and Renata says to me, go into Northeast and pick up the cash that we're going to buy, that we're going to use. It's at the safe house. And I go and I say, okay. Now, it's illegal in Maryland. Right, the overt act.
Safe house sounds bad. It's at your grandmother's house.
It's at our grandmother's house.
Okay.
I go into D.C. to pick up the cash, to bring it back to Maryland, right, to do the illegal drug deal in Maryland. So it's illegal. Drugs are illegal in D.C. Drugs are illegal in Maryland, right? The overt act is in the District of Columbia, but the crime to be committed is a Maryland crime. And so I was wondering, so when I was looking at this, I was thinking about the connection to the District of Columbia of the Overt Act, and therefore the linkage between one and two about is it like the concept to justify this, is it an ongoing agreement that gives us jurisdiction because an aspect of the Overt Act. It's the Overt Act that gives us the linkage to our jurisdiction, right?
So you're in C and I was in D, right? You're in C.
I'm in...
No, he's in D.
I'm in D, too.
It has to do with what an Overt Act is.
Well, the Overt Act is the picking up the cash at grandma's that is going to be used to purchase the drugs in Maryland while the agreement had occurred in Maryland.
So let me just say make one general point, which I'm not sure if the memo clearly articulated, but this is a straight up elementized version of what we currently have.
As co-drafters, we're making
a limited amount of time. And we're making choices based upon our areas of competency as to where to devote it and where not to. Jurisdiction and then all of the related evidentiary issue, everything that goes along with it you probably could spend 6 months just working out all these jurisdictional issues. So what we ultimately said was, under the circumstances, the thing we'll do is we're going to just take what our current jurisdictional provision, what's current law, and just elementize it, which is to say, just make clear what it's saying, and that's it. And so that's what we did. And so,
So you're saying my hypo would be the same as
your
under current
law? You're
that's
not
right.
even in here.
That's right.
You're not in here.
Yeah.
Why is he in here?
Because
You had a conspiracy in another jurisdiction to engage in conduct. That means to do the criminal conduct.
Oh, you're right, within the District of Columbia.
Right.
And that
this is a conspiracy
a
formed in another jurisdiction to engage in conduct in another jurisdiction is a violation of this section if you do an overt act in D.C.? That's Dave's scenario. Dave, you're not in D.C.
Oh, right, because it wasn't to engage in the ultimate conduct
D.C.
It was always to do it in Maryland.
Right.
And so you just have an overt act in furtherance of a intended Maryland crime.
Right.
Okay. So you're right.
So it's not a D.C. No. So yeah.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
That would be our take. And I think, again, under both existing and I think you're right. So, right. We did not go into, and there isn't. Sure, legislative history.
I went through all the different because it's part of the 1970s.
I think it's the question of how much we have to agree on the conduct.
On the specificity?
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to spend a little more time thinking this through, but I have a strong sense that at the core of your hypo, which you raise, is actually it's not really so much a jurisdictional issue as it is a mens rea issue, and the fact that in your hypothetical scenario, which you've raised, the person has a reasonable belief that what he or she is agreeing to is legal because of where he or she thinks she is. And so it seems to me that's what the sort of crux is in your hypothetical. It's less about...
I'm making... Okay. I don't have a poker face.
Yeah.
I am making faces because that sounds like the defense is, I didn't know it was unlawful.
No, I didn't know she was going to break the law.
Right.
Is really what you're saying is, I assumed she was purchasing it in Maryland.
Right.
I had no idea that she was going to make a left turn and illegally purchase it in the District of Columbia. Isn't that really what you're alleging? Isn't that really what's going on?
Well, so that's my question, is how much do we have to, do we have to have agreed about, what does it mean to sort of agree, a conspiracy formed, how much do we have to agree about what
this
it means to engage in the conduct?
This is why specific and general intent don't work as a practice, because it doesn't satisfy this question, right?
Is the conduct buy beer, or is it go buy beer there?
Yeah, I mean,
down
right,
the road that way, go buy beer. It's not a conspiracy because that's perfectly
right.
legal.
Yeah.
If I said, hey, Katja, run across the street.
See, here, I think, I mean, I clearly would argue this if I were a defense lawyer, and I see it as a prosecutor. You know, once you engage in a conspiracy, right, you're responsible for all the mess that might come out.
Well, that's Pinkerton now.
Right? Okay. But what you agree to here was not necessarily illegal. Just to agree to buy beer under the circumstances in which you did it, I don't believe you could demonstrate you were trying to agree to illegal conduct. Now, did it turn illegal? Yeah. But I don't know that I agree. I think I would agree that that wasn't an illegal agreement to which you came.
And conspiracy requires a pretty high mens rea for the act of the agreement, right? And then the agreement to specifically what you're agreeing to. And so that's why courts, I think, would be...
I mean, there is a generality question, which you've now clarified, which is a meaningful one, and this doesn't try and resolve it, which goes to, like, what does it mean to agree, and like, how do you understand what level of generality? So this also comes up, and it's another issue not addressed here, which is how many conspiracies, who are the parties to the conspiracy? Is it a wheel? Is it a chain? Right? There's all these issues that kind of like revolve around at what level of generality you view the conspiracy. That's not resolved here. You know,
I guess your question is, do you have to know that the thing you're agreeing to is illegal? And the answer to that is no.
No, that's right.
No, I don't, I'm not saying that we had to know. I'm just saying, I feel like we should know that Katja was about to be in D.C.
So she
may commit a crime when she buys the alcohol.
But that's because being in D.C. under your scenario is of legal... It's not the question of jurisdiction. It's the question of, like, whether or not the agreement is blameworthy at all.
Right, and that's where I am. I don't know why you care as to whether you know where you are. Because you, as far as I can tell on your facts, never intended to be committing a crime. You just thought she's going to carry out my instructions in a way that's not illegal.
I mean, one problem. Here's what I say, Laura. You know, this is, we're talking right now. Like your example with drink is to, at least to some extent, like a nalum prohibitum. In that, like, you know, it's like a whatever the rules are in any given place. Think if we were thinking in terms of like murder, right? Like, we wouldn't care as to...
How about child sex?
Sure.
Right, so you're in Alabama, where it's
was going to come
7 years
up.
Old. But, you know, you come
well,
in...
Well, we do have it. We have the 4 years here. We've had
yeah,
this.
Like
we've had this where,
right.
where Georgia's and, got a different age gap.
Exactly. And so maybe everybody says, you know, it's 14, 15, 16, but then you can also have a difference in what's the age gap between the other person, that person.
Right.
So you're in Alabama where it's age 7, and... You go over to Georgia, but you don't really know it. You thought you were in Alabama, where it's 10.
No, let's say you come to D.C. to,
and
I don't know, go
I'm
to
from
the...
Atlanta, so.
Yeah, but, so there, but there it seems seems less problematic to just say, well, you get whatever you, right? Because 7 and 10 are both like blameworthy ages if you're talking about like a...
I was trying to do something different with that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but I mean,
they absolutely are.
So here, what is it? It's
like
under 18 and a 4-year age.
No, 16.
Under 16 and a 4-year age.
So let's
think about it like this. What if aggravated assault had a higher burden? Like the definition of serious bodily injury in DC, let's just say, was much more stringent or less severe than it was in Virginia, and so the two parties conspired to, you know, beat the crap out of someone. Do we care? Does it matter to us? Like, does it seem morally relevant that as part of the two agreeing parties, they had no idea that the beatdown was going from Virginia to D.C.
I guess I'm probably less bothered by
that
degrees of crime than I am no crime or crime.
Right.
Which I guess is what Renata is saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Which is like we are in a place where it is totally legal when we make the agreement.
But it's even a step more than that, right? Because let's say one jurisdiction has a different definition or less demanding definition of simple assault than another one does. I think even there, it seems like less of an issue to me. What your hypothetical is getting at is the fact that we're basically talking about a regulatory offense that just. There's just like the line was drawn here versus there, and so.
I mean, I don't know. Assaults are. I don't know. Anyway, I just.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we'll think about it. We'll think about it.
And you know, to the extent, you know, you want to address this in comments. I think what would be helpful is like again, like go back to what Mike said. You know, like we didn't start from scratch on this, nor were we trying to be particularly, you know, critical of where the current district law is on this. So adding depth to address any of these issues, which are totally legit issues and they could come up, I don't know how we would do it here in a kind of an easy, now like this we could add some good commentary to address this, but you know, it would be helpful for us if, like, to the extent we're going further than this, right? We're going deeper, we're going into like, and it's gonna require further, are we like, is this like a hypothetical that we put in the commentary and, you know, on the off chance, there's a case that comes up on this, somebody could pull that up? Or is it a statutory change? And because we didn't go that extra step beyond like saying, okay, what would be the changes to jurisdiction that we would do to address this? Because then it has ripple effects. Like once we begin to like address this issue, right? It sounds like everybody kind of thinks that line between is it criminal or not, that goes to like, again, if we start to put in a provision like that in the statute, we're gonna have to rethink everything because like we haven't thought through the full consequences of that. So I just like, to the extent that you want this addressed now, and maybe you don't, but.
I still don't get the issue. I mean, sorry, but. In my mind, the hypo you gave, you didn't agree to doing anything illegal.
Mm-hmm.
There was no meeting of the minds to commit a crime of illegality of mm-hmm. anything, mm-hmm. because you had no idea she was going to cross the street. And mm-hmm. There are always situations where you can agree to legal things that you don't know that somebody else is going to then break the law.
No, so
you know, it's like saying,
if we agree,
I agree we're going to have steak for dinner. I didn't know she was going to go and shoplift the steak from the Safeway.
Let me ask this, Laura. How is your
meeting of minds on the shoplifting?
Can I ask you a question, Laura?
Yeah.
How is the point you're trying to make any different than the question that would be raised where two people in D.C., both, let's say that the DC Council changed the drinking age pretty quietly from 21 to 22, and two people, both same basic facts of your situation, but the people just weren't aware that the drinking age had been changed from 21 to 22, and it was a 21-year-old involved. Isn't that getting at the same sort of like moral issue that you're raising, or is there really something different?
I don't know. It does seem, I mean,
Okay, because...
Well, I guess that's, right? This is all this, it's, the problem is the agreement. It's the, like, let's have steak for dinner. I'll meet you at the meeting, whatever. I mean, I sort of feel like even if I said, Ikacha's like, oh, it looks like the beer, you know, there's a sign in the window. The beer's cheaper over there than that one we just passed. I'm running across the street. Great, right. That sounds good.
Let's get steak for dinner, and he goes and steals somebody.
But is it any different? Katya's 21.
Right.
Katya's 21. You're 40.
And we both
and you're both in D.C. The D.C. Council has changed the drinking age from 21 to 22. Just didn't get much coverage.
Reached the agreement.
And you reached the agreement to buy alcohol.
Where's our nullification guy? How come he's not?
Right. No, but is there? Isn't that the same issue? That, like, I understand your hypothetical has, like, a nice, like, jurisdiction, has, like, a jurisdictional tweak to it, but isn't the crux of your point?
I guess so.
Right. Okay. I mean, so that is a much more fundamental issue as to when you're dealing with malum prohibitum, when you're dealing with, like, regulatory, whatever label you want to put on it, things that are not, like, you know, reasonably apparent as blameworthy to most people, should there be a knowledge of the law or, you know, requirement inherent there? And like, that seems to me to be what you're raising. It's an interesting question. Like, the general part doesn't currently have anything on, we talk a little bit in commentary about ignorance of the law and how that plays in. And, you know, to be honest, like, most of this stuff, or up until now, everything we've worked on has been basically, like, malum and say, you know, kind of sort of, like, basic theft and, you know, property now, offense against persons. But, yeah, I mean, that's something.
It's all about the agreement. So it seems to me that your question is about, not about jurisdiction, but about what specificity of agreement do we need to constitute conspiracy. So it would be as if we said, Laura, let's go get drugs tonight. And that's the extent of our agreement. I'm thinking maybe you're going to get marijuana, which is legal now, and you buy heroin. Am I guilty of conspiracy to possess controlled substance or not? But all we agreed on is generically, let's get drugs.
That's a great example.
Is that a conspiracy or not? It seems like that's
right.
The goal. That's
no,
really
but yeah, but that's scenario. So that. But I think there's an easy. I think there's a clear answer to that one, right?
Right. Because so that's your resolve.
Because it's very specific.
Right.
Let's get high on weed.
Right.
That's
more specific than
let's. Let's eat steak.
No, but
you
say let's get
drugs
generally. Like, let's
deal with that example.
Tonight. Yeah, let's get intoxicated tonight, Laura. And you're like, I agree. Here's money. And that's the extent of the agreement that we can prove.
Not enough of an agreement.
And so I think that sort of resolves, or it's like relevant to your question, where it's like, let's just get
a
beer tonight.
Hold on.
Let's
is
work.
It because you don't, do you?
No. It's a sliding scale. So judges do this all the time. They'll say, it is enough of an agreement if what you're doing is money laundering, and the money laundering is related to drugs or gambling, right? You thought it was gambling, but it turned out it was drugs. Guess what? You know, tough luck. You know, that mistake about whether it was money or drugs would have been important if it had been gambling and not drugs.
Isn't there something about, like, quid where you don't have to say what the underlying drug is?
You don't, sure. Right, because it's controlled substance.
Yep.
But
right.
Now
so
let's subtract, now we're going to subtract marijuana.
Not
a controlled substance.
It's not a controlled substance. It's all we can
okay.
reach.
Exactly.
You need the schedule.
Right. No, but I mean,
you can't, like, whether it's Schedule One.
Well,
or two,
right. Well, that's
so you can't just say let's get high. You have to say let's get high on that schedule.
Right. So I think there's a lot of common intuitions on this.
Yeah.
There is not binding district case law on this stuff. I'm sure there are pieces, other jurisdictions. I'm sure it's contradictory. I'm sure it's applied in different ways, in different situations. The green, I think, is, you know, the language which, you know, it's conduct which, if carried out, will constitute that offense. So when that's written, what we're putting forward with that language, you know, right? So conduct is not, it doesn't require, again, spelling everything out, right? Like when we say we're going to go beat somebody up, it's not, you know, I'm going to disfigure them in a, you know, lasting way, you know, all the, everything for ag assault, right? You know, so it's always going to be, and again, it's different on these
government
things where you meet the initial threshold, but, you know, that language,
is that language, like, that's the new that we're putting out. If you can read that in different ways, and I think from this discussion you can, it means that it's going to get argued that way. Like, yeah, today, sitting around, we may all kind of agree on general our intuitions on this, but once it goes in the text, you know, there it is. And if that isn't clear, and if the commentary isn't clear...
I think it is.
It's a possibility.
Which it carried out. And she's going to be arguing the conduct that we agreed to was just to buy some beer.
Yeah.
And, so and that, nobody talked about getting it over the line where it was illegal. The conduct was getting high. Nobody, like, talked about, like, a controlled substance. The conduct was, let's have steak, frat brothers. Nobody talked about Dave stealing it out of the Piggly Wiggly.
Yeah. So, you know, if we don't, if we want to leave that, like, again, like,
some good Piggly Wiggly.
Those kinds of arguments, I think we would be fine just leaving it at that, right? Like, those arguments, yeah, in the hard cases, you're going to be arguing about this language.
Those arguments are
exactly.
Well, right.
And so it's going to be litigated, and, you know.
So I would just, let me just add that on the end of the commentary, there's, like, you know, two general sentences which say something along the lines of, like, you know, these subsections are intended to preserve existing district law relevant to the elements to the extent it's consistent, and so that they should be read to incorporate existing legal authorities wherever appropriate. And then when, in the footnote, it says, among other issues, this includes determining the scope, duration, and number of conspiracies, cites some DCCA case law. I mean, the question of scope, duration, number of conspiracies, first of all, there's no, like, satisfying... this just, you know, this simple rule will just, you know, fix it all for you. I mean, these are just basic questions that are inherent in conspiracy liability. And so we, you know, the goal is just to leave them as they were.
Let me plead that, like, so there are lots of great questions that can come from all this. So I just kind of want to try to bring it all back to, like, what we could or should change in this new statute or the commentary to address it. Because sorting this stuff out, like, and the hypos, like, does it move this forward, or do we want to leave it at this level of vague?
Like, if you have a proposal, like, which is
no,
a, if there's a proposal.
I have another hypo, and okay. I want to understand if we have an agreement.
Sure.
Okay.
So, but
or I maybe
say,
I don't understand any of what I read after complimenting you on.
No, no. Well, I should.
But here, but so this is so you know,
right?
What you're about to propose is not okay, and I don't. So you say, will you help me break up this transaction to deposit it in the bank, or, you know, something that, like. Sure, I'll help you make that change or whatever. We definitely agree. I have no idea that it's illegal. I have agreed, but I don't have any of the other.
Wait, sorry. The this is a situation where the money.
Right. I mean, I'm, like, probably making a federal crime and not a state.
No. It's a good question.
Yes, but it has something to do with, like, I can't deposit $1,000. There's something where you can't do $1,000. And so you say, can you help me? Or, you know, or it's campaign contributions. Can I? Do you mind if I put your name down on the donation to so and so's campaign? And I say, sure, that sounds fine. That sounds great.
What are the elements of the offense we're talking about? Because the thing you're kind of toggling back and forth between is you're giving one set of examples where it's a question of ignorance of the law.
Right.
And then there.
So let
me give you a clear, like,
okay,
like, a, here's a more straightforward situation.
I don't have the culpability.
Right. So, answered? Okay. I was going to say, a simpler and not bordering on the regulatory realm example would be, right, like, it is stolen property, but only one of us knows that it's stolen, right? And so the question would be, have we conspired to, let's say, you know, have we conspired to do, you know, unlawfully use stolen
bicycle.
Property. But the thing is,
the
both parties have to know that the property is stolen.
Okay.
And
okay.
So, okay. So that, but so that's a situation where the mens rea dealt with here, you know, disposes
okay.
of it.
And I actually think that's in the wording of that, because
yeah.
that
that's
is...
That's the action with the culpable required.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a constitute act.
And it
you're
did,
not.
There wasn't that crime.
Okay.
There was no crime in your mind, even though it was on the other part. In the other
so,
person's
okay, we're good. Thank you.
I just want to make sure there are two... To me, you brought up scope. Are we ready to move on? There are two things that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you guys have changed the scope of the statute significantly.
Okay.
And the two places, and my question is, if I'm reading these correctly, which
right.
I think I am, will there be other offenses to address these two issues? So the first one is the police sting.
Right.
Sorry?
Police sting.
Right.
So in a police sting situation, like that guy just got arrested
yeah.
for terrorism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that the $250 in, right, not just arrest, he might have gone to trial.
That's right.
Right, the $250 or whatever the amount of gift cards he was going to send to ISIS,
right.
turns out that, unbeknownst to him, the guy that was the other part of the conspiracy
right.
was an FBI agent.
Right.
Right. Under my reading of current law, a sting would be a conspiracy, and under my reading of this, a sting is no longer a conspiracy. Is that correct?
So, do you have any like have any authority for any DCCA case
yeah,
law?
We do, because we just changed
yeah.
the jury instruction on receipt of stolen property in connection with whatever that case law.
But
was.
It would be receiving stolen property. The question is whether it's also a conspiracy. So first of all,
so
let me
we
say,
agree. Let's say in that ISIS example, right? Let's say
it'd be solicitation. You're right. It would be so.
I say to you, all right, this is the deal.
Which one of you is the FBI agent?
He's the FBI agent.
Okay.
And I say to you, look, I'll do this. I'll get $250 worth of gift cards. Will you mail it to ISIS?
Right.
And you say, sure. Right? And then I go out and buy the gift cards.
Right.
So this is an overt act. I mean, I don't know. Right? Now, is there a meeting of a minds to commit a crime?
No. Well, so a crime... So first of all, the District of Columbia has a solicitation statute. It only applies to crimes of violence. That would be soliciting a crime where one person interacts with an undercover officer, asks an undercover officer to commit a crime, or has an interaction of that nature. As far as my understanding is, DC, like the federal system, applies the bilateral approach.
See,
that the two or more persons...
And maybe we need to do more
right.
research.
Yeah.
That was not my understanding of the law, which is why I thought you guys were changing it.
Right.
I thought it was that a sting operator, you would still be guilty of a conspiracy even if the other party was a police officer who had no intent of actually mailing the cards or doing whatever the activity was. And so maybe
yeah, so
that's just, we might need, I'm going to need to do a little research.
Definitely.
Those three
yeah,
days.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so that's a question.
That's just a question of
that
right.
Was
yeah, that's right.
We'll check on that too, so feel free to, you know, call
okay.
Michael
yeah.
and just
definitely.
Say there's
definitely, yeah.
something
the
more.
Second one, which I'm pretty sure is you changed, was the part having to do with defrauding D.C. government.
That's
that
right. That's a change,
right.
yeah.
So the question is, I'm okay with a pure conspiracy statute.
Right.
If we have, it sort of reminds me of one of the things I said at the last meeting on the last set of stuff. If we then have a statute that deals specifically with defrauding DC or the courts, because it doesn't seem to me that we should be legalizing the behavior, which was put in your examples of how that statute, that second clause of the current statute, is implemented.
Right. So basically the sense was that if there is conduct that it should be clearly spelled out in a specific offense. And then if you want to add conspiracy onto that, go ahead. But to have a sort of like general amorphous category of conduct which only conspiring to do it is criminal, but not criminal if one person does it alone. And to not spell that out would be problematic. And so, right, the model penal code drafters, that was the approach they recommended. So, for example, if what you're talking about is issues of political corruption, there are specific political corruption statutes, and then you apply general, you apply the general conspiracy offense to
which
it.
Which is what my comment was.
Right.
Which is I could live with it coming out of the conspiracy if we all agree that there's going to then be an offense, a specific offense that deals with that type of behavior.
So in that 27,
you phrase it.
Well, it might be. It might be. So the problem with this in general is, like, you know, there's practically no cases brought using that prong, right? That
yeah, I agree.
And,
it's
and so the question
but
is,
it's serious
and,
when
and
it happens.
Why not? Because, right, conspiracy to commit fraud is always available, so why, you know, and there are other things, right? Public corruption, you know, but so I think in some sense, you're absolutely right to raise this, and I think the question whether it changes the scope in part depends on, well, what other statutes are there going to be out there that deal with this kind of fraud, corruption type behavior, and that we don't know at this point. What we maybe should do then is to flag this right now. We can do it in the, you know, I don't know. This is the kind of it's the kind of like writer that goes that we should we kind of want to mark like, okay, if, you know, we're submitting this to the council in 8 months, and, you know, we haven't gotten to looking at public corruption, we want to make sure that when it goes forward, it's with, well, we said this, here's this, but it's with the understanding that...
That's exactly right. That's all I'm asking.
So, yeah.
Because
yeah.
what I don't want
I think
people to
totally
do is simply say,
exactly.
everybody was on board with, you know, with changing the conspiracy statute,
that's
and then they change it, and it's like, well, what happened to the public
corruption? Yeah, because it depends on what happens with these other offenses.
That's right.
We haven't looked at that. I think before we have said, and I think it's true, that, like, you know, as with a fraud, you know, a straight-up fraud statute, you know, the kind of, you know... The good place, you know, the services type fraud. The district needs a revamped public corruption statute, right? That is not on the top of our list to address, but it needs to happen. And it's the kind of thing which might very well alleviate some of these concerns about increasing.
Right, and, you know, just all the other thing worth highlighting is that everything would remain criminal under federal law, right? So, I mean,
you argue to the city council that you would prefer us not prosecuting Laurie and doing federal law.
I'm not going to be available for this fight.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, no. Right, no, look, I mean, the general point is, does it make sense? Is there conduct that is not blameworthy enough to be criminal when one person does it alone, but should be criminal when two people merely agree to do it? That's just one general question, you know. And then separate apart from that is, you know, so if the answer is yes, then which types of conduct in particular are we talking about, rather than having a sort of like amorphous box of fraud in which all sorts of different things get thrown
into. And that's what
into.
I'm saying. I'm not against fixing it.
So
I just want to make sure it's addressed.
And I think that's the way, like, and if you want to put this in the comments, I think, again, what I would almost suggest is it's the kind of thing which it doesn't so much a change to the statute or even the commentary at this point, but it is the kind of, it's a caveat to any of this going forward that you want to see. You want to see how it matches up with other offenses that would be.
That's otherwise, in other words, basically what I'm saying is, assuming that OHA agrees with all of this, if we agree it's with the provision,
that
there's another statute that picks up the gap.
That's right.
Not to simply replace it.
So I will say that one challenge there is it's not completely clear what the gap is, right?
No, it's, but...
And so...
There's a lot of places.
Yeah, no. But I mean, right?
Yeah,
so like the 2017 case, right, was a case where, you know, where it was a public corruption. It was also criminal under DC law, under a particular public corruption. It was really just a penalty issue, right? And so, I mean,
I understand.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you know, Laura now searches for, I think, gaps in our materials and then writes comments whenever she sees that we say there was a gap. Chimes in on that, but, you know, we fill gaps and we deal with it. Really, you know, there's plenty of love to, you know, we get it from everybody. Is there anything more on conspiracy right now? Or again, you know, Michael's available. I volunteer Michael for calls. Or again, like I think the tricky thing on this again is like lots of questions arise out of this. But like, what would actually change in terms of the, you know, the commentary or the statute to address those questions? Because that's where it's more like, do we?
I do have a suggestion.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I'll just float this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that I love the language, but okay. here's my idea. Here's what I think bothers me. Your E. Now, we have scenarios where I should be bothered within the District of Columbia, but just to go with my original crossing the border.
Okay.
If E didn't say that the legality of the conduct in the other jurisdiction was immaterial, it might not be a defense, but it does seem to me it could be relevant to determining the sort of mental states and the culpability, that, you know, whether the person acted with the culpability.
So you don't like the word irrelevant, but immaterial would make more sense to you? Or
no, you have immaterial. The word immaterial.
Which is what's used in the current statute.
All right.
Yeah. So
we're reforming.
Yeah. So you.
No,
think
I want to. I want it to say, you know, sort of under circumstances where D1 and 2 can be established, it is no defense. Blah 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 blah. However, it may be relevant to determining.
Got it.
You know that it could just be
understood.
Considered. If you say it's immaterial, then this whole but we were in Maryland, it was totally legal, and who knew? And da 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 da. Well, you can't even bring that in, because it's immaterial. Sort of feel like that's too strong.
That's
at least a piece of it. I don't know where anybody else landed on that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's a straightforward recommendation.
Yeah. As long as I don't have a problem with that in concept, as long as it is clear about what we're talking about. In other words, it is immaterial. I agree in the situations that you posit that it is immaterial, but I think in general that's not really what the current law was talking about. I think they're talking about is you're in Maryland, you're planning to break D.C. law. It doesn't matter that in Maryland it's legal. You know that is immaterial.
In the normal
whether
case,
it's, in the normal case that's what you know.
Right.
So somehow good. Addressing it more
yeah,
to
maybe
a
that's
mental
a,
state problem.
So maybe we could eliminate it here, but in the commentary address that it often is, you know, like in the kind of more usual case, it is immaterial. Like, maybe that would address it partly. Like, you want to be able to argue this in these difficult
in these
cases.
Rare cases
that
but otherwise, we don't want them to say, hey, it was legal where we were doing it. It's not immaterial.
Yeah, I'm sure that this might be something that, like, a de minimis provision would open the door to dealing with, where you just have a sort of like a, you know, a general grant. This is like, you know, you kind of, your hypothetical is an interesting combination of both the ignorance, you know, when should or should not ignorance of law be a defense, in addition to the added layer of you don't know what jurisdiction you're in. And so, yeah, like it would probably be useful if there was a way in which judges
it's awareness of the law in the wrong jurisdiction.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I got nothing else to conspiracy.
Good. Anybody else for now? Or if not, last thing before we move on to fraud, and I'd love to address it because our fraud person may be out the next meeting, is just kind of quickly, I mentioned the email, you know, Pinkerton, and just in practice, we have a hard time getting a hold of what's going on because, you know, it doesn't show up in stats. The court doesn't track this the same way. You know, it's not even conspiracy. And we don't quite. And you know, trying to get court folks to kind of even understand how they might, the clerks in various cases might be recording this. We haven't cracked that nut yet. So, we don't have
Pinkerton.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a Pinkerton a field in as far as we. Yeah. So right. Just practically, you know, as we think about like what or how or whether to address this, like just to get a sense of like how often is Pinkerton liability anecdotally in your experience, you know, used and what kinds of instances?
I don't know what Katja thinks about this, but I think for us, it's almost in the instances where we do proceed under Pinkerton theory, it's always coupled with aiding and abetting. And I don't think there have been more than a handful of cases, maybe in a decade, where we have proceeded certainly solely on a Pinkerton theory. But that's just the anecdotal feeling
of
things.
And do you have like types of cases? Are these more, are these drug cases, murder
cases?
These
are homicides I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I would say it's all the time, but yes, in homicides with a co-defendant, very frequent.
It's frequent, right?
Very frequent. Yeah. And it is combined with aiding and abetting because the government has then both theories that they can.
Gotcha.
Move
so it's
forward.
Just brought in along with it and proceeds alongside aiding and abetting.
But Pinkerton's quite a bit easier than accomplice liability.
Right, but then they get both jury instructions.
Right.
So right. It just all proceeds.
And then also they get statements through Pinkerton.
Right. So Pinkerton's a big deal.
Yeah.
And just in terms of even frequency wise.
I don't know how much it's used in the non-homicide.
Got it.
But it's very common.
I think it's much less frequent in non-homicide cases.
Okay.
Rare by itself. And when it is by itself, it's in cases where we think we've identified a true ringleader.
And I guess one question I have, Renata, that's like USAO specific, is any reason for that have to do with the fact that in certain types of cases, it's just better to proceed in federal court? Like, is it that, or is it just a D.C. specific policy?
So, for example,
large drug conspiracies, right? We know that the federal government often prosecutes large drug conspiracies under Pinkerton liability.
I don't think it's related to that.
You just don't see that in Superior Court.
Right, it's just not.
It's really homicide is where you're...
types of cases, you just don't see that.
Right, and so I guess my question is, and that has nothing to do with the fact that as a matter of practice, when there are large drug conspiracies in the district, the U.S. Attorney's Office will usually prosecute those federally as opposed, thereby foregoing Superior Court, because all those offenses are also criminal under federal law.
Not actually thought about that.
Okay.
I don't. It may be that's how it ends up working out.
Right.
There's no policy that makes
Got
it.
Got it. Okay.
We're going to do this in district court. Right. No, it's not that.
Okay.
Good. Any other thoughts or questions? Again, at this point, we're not. We don't have any immediate plans to work on that. But like, I mean, obviously, Pinkerton kind of. Seems large because, right, it is in some ways much easier than conspiracy. So anyway,
the other question for the stakeholders here, which is that it seemed like there were. I was surprised at how few conspiracy convictions there were in the district. Is that a reflection of conspiracy charges being dropped during plea bargaining? Or is it just as you were just discussing that maybe conspiracies get charged in federal court, or they're really restricted to homicides in the district?
I just feel like it's really not charged. And when was the law changed to make the crime of violence? Because there was a point when conspiracy to commit a crime, any crime, was a 5-year maximum. And so there was a lot of incentive to take a plea to that previously. And once it changed to a 15-year, it no longer had that same desirability, I think, as a plea offense. And then I just don't see it charged as a standalone offense, even when they go for that, for conspiracy as a theory of liability.
And well, you don't have to charge it when, right?
Right. But then you don't get that offense.
Yeah,
right.
No, it's so an interesting... It's an interesting question as to why that would be.
I'll just add on the side note. We'll send out that chart. The addition was wonky. We'll send out an updated version. It's on the screen right now. This was in that accompanying memo that we put the stats. You know. And Don, you're suggesting these numbers are low compared to what you've seen in other jurisdictions, or just what your expectation was, or?
Yeah, just generally. But, you know, that not to, I mean, if they're serious cases, then they have serious consequences, and, yeah. And you know.
And if we think that most of these are homicide, right? They are serious cases.
I mean, one thing you don't.
It's homicides where it's used as a theory of liability. I don't think it. I don't think the standalone offenses are coming in homicides. Is my experience, and so.
Right.
As a general matter, you don't see a lot of inchoate. You don't like, for example, we were talking in attempts. I mean, you just don't see, at least, you know, published what the DCCA published opinions on isn't necessarily a good indication of what's happening in Superior Court. But it is interesting that there's very, very rarely any case law on inchoate conduct that doesn't ultimately result in some harm, you know, even if we're talking about like assault with intent to kill. I mean, you know, there's just not that much or hardly anything published where the conduct doesn't, you know, basically reach the end, whether or not it fails the end, but, you know, stop some point beyond there. And right, conspiracy is much more inchoate than attempt because, you know, we're here in the district, it's dangerous proximity. Even substantial step, right? I mean, overt act is even earlier in the timeline in terms of, like, the progression from idea to completion, so.
Any last thoughts before we move on to fraud? Great. Thank you all for, it's difficult stuff. Thank you for your patience. Wanted to kind of skip to report 10, which is the fraud report, and part Janu probably won't be with us at the next meeting, so we could revisit this then again in February, but like it'd be great to try to get through some of these right now. So thought we'd start with OAG comments and in that report number 10. And I'll pull it up on the screen for folks, okay. Too. Basically, OAG comments had focused on three offenses in Report 10. Fraud, identity theft, and we always call it FIBA.
Page 1 of my,
in the original, so, because I want to pull it up and compare it with our notes.
Sure. I will have to, let's see.
Do you just want to speak to the FIBA?
Yeah, well, so there were three offenses that there were comments on. I think fraud, you know, we talked with Dave about this. We agree in principle about this, like, we want to cover this case of causing the transfer. So, like, we'll just figure out the language, you know, whether it's that or... So we're generally on board with that. The other two are, again, FIBA, which we call FIBA. Do you guys just call financial exploitation of vulnerable adult?
I prefer not to talk about it.
We have no acronym.
Something short. It was really more identity theft, a couple comments. So maybe let's go there first, and I'll find the page number for you, Renata, on identity theft here. Okay, so identity theft in report number 10 starts on page 36. Page 36 in report number 10 is where identity theft is. And I'll try to summarize just, one thing to address, OAG had kind of mentioned that, you know, look, there were a couple things that we changed the scope on this, but the OAG kind of put forward this proposal that identity theft should cover not just conduct to enrich themselves from it, but to harm another person, okay? And OAG had kind of given this the example, pull it up here.
Is this the Facebook example?
So setting up a website under somebody else's name.
Like David actor kind of recently who came out, Chris somebody, said, be careful, somebody's pretending to me.
I didn't remember.
I didn't know that.
Like a few days ago.
Okay. But this is kind of, I think, where the OAG comments were coming from on that. And, you know, this, right, so here we go. This is page 2 of the OAG comments on report 10. Starts to talk about this. Yeah, for example, a person may set up a Facebook account or other social media using the identity of a person that they would like to hurt. Friend, quotation marks, their friends, and then put up false or embarrassing posts and pictures. The end of that paragraph. We therefore suggest that the paragraph D be added, which states, quote, harm the person whose identifying information was used. So again, that there would be a prong of identity theft that addresses not just intent to essentially enrich oneself from the use of this information, but also an intent doing this conduct, using their personal information with intent to harm the person whose identifying information.
You know, it was funny, and after I thought of that as an example, I went online, and the first hit I hit was Facebook help for this very situation.
Yeah. So
so it must happen more than, I mean, I was just thinking of an example.
Exactly. So I wanted to open this up a bit because I think, one, this is a, I think our take was in general with the identity theft, like we cut out this other prong about like using it to falsely identify yourself in a to a police officer, right? It's a separate matter. But, you know, our thought was to kind of make identity theft more in the property offenses, kind of focused on this, like the unjust enrichment, the property gain that's resulting from this. But I think the comment goes to what David mentioned was like, look, if there were multiple acts, this might well be stalking behavior, right? In the sense that you're
but coming. If it's not,
but if it's just one act, right?
One thing, I set up the Facebook account and I put on all these things about Renata, that I'm Renata. I only do it once.
Right.
It's not stalking, but
if it's a one-off, it's
Facebook, so I could hit 300 of a friends in one shot.
It could be even narrower. I mean, it could be, hi, I'm Renata on the phone, and then say something bad about Renata. And that would, because names count as identifying information, and like all of a sudden that would now constitute identity theft.
Maybe. Maybe you call up MS-13 and I'm I'm Renata, here's where I live, and we're prosecuting you.
So I actually pulled it up. It's Chris Pratt, who recently warned that someone else is posing as him on his Facebook.
Chris
Pratt. I have no idea.
Chris Evans, Chris Pratt.
Come on. Oh, really?
No one watches that.
Yeah.
Yes, also that Jurassic Park.
Oh, he was the Guardians of the Galaxy Jurassic World star.
Yeah.
Whatever that
is. Oh, now I know who he is.
Oh, this is his photo up here, if you can see that.
Oh, yeah, he's
not the Chris that was in Wonder Woman.
This is my only Chris
Pine.
I don't even think it needs to... I'm so sorry.
Or in the Avengers.
He's going to start talking in a second. Oh.
Shut your volume.
I would make it stop.
Shut your volume.
That's why I don't know who he is. I don't even know how to work my phone. So I understand what you're getting at here, and I would even argue it doesn't necessarily have to be to cause the owner of the Facebook page harm. In this case, given what is going on in Hollywood right now, I understood his warning to be there's probably someone on, he said, trying to get people's phone numbers and meet women. And so it's not so much to harm him, but to use that so that they may be able to harm others through harassment or sexual assault. However, while I see that, and I would say, hey, if you're going to do that, then it should even cover that conduct. We have always taken the position that is beyond the scope. So
you don't think it? You don't think under current law? I thought was a major expansion of current law.
Well, I
thought
minor on all these.
No, but I thought that you were actually narrowing the scope a bit, and I was just coming back with one particular way that I thought that it. To balance that now.
Sure. Well, I guess I would say this. Like, one, we can we could go this direction in a new way. I would note that, again, I think your point on stalking was very, that's right. And what some jurisdictions have for this kind of thing is a harassment statute, which is a little different than what we have for stalking. It's less severe. It's essentially, it's a less severe form of stalking, which might
be a one-time thing.
Which might have these one-time things.
Right. No, absolutely.
Basically, where I was coming from was almost like we have voyeurism if I put on pictures, nude pictures of the people, right?
Yeah.
We've got the commercial porn. What is it called?
Revenge porn.
Revenge porn. But there was a phrase we put in there. But this is not.
This is not that
pictures,
right.
Yeah. But it's the same idea how one event can get.
Yeah, and I think like there is a lot of prominence in the media about these kinds of. It's conduct that used to be libel or they are largely reputational harms, but they are severe. They have the ability with social media to mushroom into much bigger deals than it would have been. It's not just crank calling a few people when you had landlines, right? Now you have websites and you can blast out. Definitely get that this is a type of thing that's talked about a lot, and what to do with it, I don't know. My suggestion would be this, but I wanted to kind of get this, any sense of this is, when we look at stalking, that might be the place to plug this in as in some sense, a lower form, which is to say, again, the underlying harm, it's not as personal. It doesn't, stalking raises all this, a lot of research saying, stalking often does lead to, violent behavior. There's a lot of other stuff going on there, but yeah.
I mean, the larger question is, what are we doing with emotional injury, right? Because if when you say harm, if you're talking about bodily injury, then it's an assault. So then the question is...
If it's reputational, not a small suggestion.
Well, so exactly. So I think it is a big one, and I think part of it is, again, it's the name, the identifying information is not just social security numbers,
right? You
don't
have all of it, right? You could have one.
Our definition is so broad that for identifying information is including just name, that it opens up potentially very low level stuff coming in. But also, I understand the point that there's some more serious conduct.
I'm sorry, I did not mean to shoot you down.
No, that's fine.
U.S. Attorney's Office has...
But my problem with that, quite honestly, is I don't think we could take the attitude of we shouldn't add something because it's not where we've been in the very same code provision where we remove three things that are
I think we're currently there.
So if we can remove, we can.
I thought you said it had shrunk, so that's why I'm not arguing.
And that's where we stand on that point, too, which is why I'm going to take a look at that.
Okay.
I didn't talk about it, but it's in my notes.
You're right.
We've said this from the very beginning.
Yeah. Good. All right. Do we need to... does anybody want to talk more about that point now? Okay, this is now. So, also, anything else on identity theft that you want to, touch on? I think we do... Yes, want to be clear that, again, we do intend, and I think we kind of said this, to address otherwise this kind of... the conduct of providing a false name to an officer, which is right now in the statute, right? And I think this is, again, the exact kind of asterisk we were just saying before with respect to what other kind of corruption or fraud might, depending on how that settles out on these other offenses, would affect your stance on this one. I think this is one of those points, where we want to stake out and kind of note that, going forward, we need to address this in another statute And I think that's
and the reason why I brought that up, and I agree, and this was actually the one that I was trying to remember where I wanted to footnote it, because I don't remember if it was to your group or at this or at the full meeting where I said we've actually had examples where people gave the wrong person's name, which then ended up causing a custody order, a warrant to go out, and some poor guy got arrested. And so that's a large consequence to an innocent person. And so giving out the name can have implications, and people should not be doing it. So that, yeah, this is exactly that same situation as the last thing.
Yeah. The last thing that, OG mentioned on this is, again, the financial exploitation of a vulnerable adult, also known as FIVA, and we'd agree that the knowledge requirement that we had in there as to age or vulnerable state is too strong, too high. I think what we might suggest instead, and we'll talk more about it, would be a reckless, which is kind of gets at where the current law is new or reasonably believed, and you know, where's that coming out at? Well, in our new realm, you're aware of a substantial and unjustifiable risk.
That's right, and I could live with that. My problem was, I thought he was 64. Prove I thought he was 65.
Yeah,
that you can't do that.
Yeah. Good.
So you will revise that.
So and we're looking at reckless for that as a possible way to address that concern. So I think that was it on Report 10 from OAG. The PDS comments on Report 10. There were a few concerning totally different statutes. go figure. Check fraud, unlawful labeling of a recording, and alteration of motor vehicle identification numbers. I think the VIN numbers, we talked some about this before.
We'll take you on the report.
So when are we going offense by offense, or is this something?
Sure.
Our Report 10 comments are on page 12 of our.
Thank you.
All right, so hold on.
That helps, yeah.
We did talk about the VIN before. You had just said at the end of that, still put it in your comments, so we did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for
addressing.
I don't know that there's more to say about that now.
All right, so it's where in the PDS memo?
Page 12.
Starting page 12.
The numbers are top left hand corner on the estate.
Please put them on the right.
So there are two other things: check fraud, unlawful labeling. The unlawful labeling, there was a kind of a recurring theme, as it were, in some of the PDS comments about eliminating the permissive inferences. And I don't know that there's much to say about that. I suspect maybe there is, but my guess is. There might be a lot of agreement. I would love to. I love agreement, whatever it is. But I'm suspecting not so much. But I think that's a very straightforward point and argument you're making there. On check fraud, I thought that might be a productive thing to kind of talk about and help us understand a bit more. So there were two points that PDS raised on check fraud. One was to clarify that you must know at the time that the check will not be honored, and we agree with that. Whether it's through adding in language, repeating knowing again, or otherwise kind of addressing it through, that's what's intended, and we will try to be as clear about that. So your first point about knowingly mental state would normally run through that offense, so under our current rules of construction. But on the permissive inference for check fraud, it's a bit more interesting, and you spent some more time on this argument, and we're, as a practical matter, just wanted to kind of understand a bit more how these cases work, and how much that permissive inference, for instance, is used or relied upon. So again, the PDS recommendation was to eliminate the permissive inference. And part of the argument was, look, what it's doing at this point is it's it's this kind of backwards time thing, right? You know, a certain amount of time goes by after being notified that you're overdrawn and you don't respond or remedy it. From that, you should be able to infer the mental state as to the intent to deliberately overdraw an account, not by accident. Now, again, I suspect we haven't run the numbers. My guess is the number of check fraud cases decreases every year as checks themselves become less commonly used. But they're still out there. There still are stats, right? You know, it's still happening. But we don't, yeah, I don't have a sense of, like, the cases. Is this permissive inference used? We can't tell anything from the stats about that or, like, how important it is, or whether it's there's certain kinds of cases. If there's another way to address the concern here behind the permissive inference, this is, again, it's been around for a while, so there's not legislative history as to, like, So, yeah, thoughts or discussion on particularly this permissive inference and how it's used or helpful or plays out in check fraud?
I've never had a check fraud case, but where there are permissive inferences, for instance, from possession of recently stolen property, the government asks for them for that jury instruction and gets that jury instruction if there's any evidence to support it. So I don't know why it wouldn't be
used in a standard way.
Right. Yeah. It's available because it's available.
It just goes to like how these cases work, because my guess is it is a significant amount of time before these cases are even picked up, right? Like, it strikes me, and I don't know that the cases that are going on, the ones that we've seen in the reported thing, it was a guy who'd been this, like, serially.
Well, it was like a fraud case. Okay. The guy was doing a check cutting scheme.
And what year was the case? I'm just curious. What year was the case?
The check cutting scheme was in the 90s.
Yeah, that's older stuff. Yeah. We still see some numbers for this, not much. We're just trying to get a sense of, like, how this happens, right? Because presumably a check bounces or multiple check bounces. What happens months go by where before it gets reported, it was a bank, you know, like, at issue is, again, what was the mental state?
MPD used to have a whole unit for check fraud. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's been years since I've dealt with that.
So, I mean, I made a note. We have a person, and that tells me something. We have a person and a prosecutor in our office who does the vulnerable adult prosecutions and this sort of thing.
Okay.
I could certainly follow up on, like, how we see these things, but at the end of the day, I don't even know that that matters. It may tell us we don't see it often, but it still leaves it to be discussed as to it exists.
That's right. There is the more principled kind of, like, fundamental question, which PS raises, again, throughout other offenses too. Why do you have a permissive inference, right? And they're arguing to get rid of them. Is it useful? I think perhaps there are more case charge-specific reasons why, for particular offenses, it might make more sense than in others. It struck me that this might be one where it is a little different, just because the transactional nature, and it's, again, like, I don't quite understand the mechanics of how and when this is even getting reported. Is it weeks, months later, and it's all hanging on, like, some random person, you know, like, person who was never at the time checking. Anyway, any additional thoughts or feedback you have on that, let me know. But maybe there's nothing more to discuss on it. I appreciate making a point and being.
It's like a generalized point.
And for the record, you're not adding any. You're just, the question is whether we should keep the existing one.
Right. The PDS recommendation was to eliminate the
existing one.
That's right. Okay. That's right. That's right. All right. Well, any other?
Oh, wait. The criminal graffiti. I think both mine and I think I told it my.
That was the point where you guys agreed.
We agreed.
On. That's right. That's right.
I really don't want it in. I'm sorry. That's not. Right. I was on the same page.
That's fine. That was the parental liability. Or no, not the parental liability.
Parental liability and restitution.
Yes, but I thought.
For different reasons, we both agreed to be out.
On both points, parental liability and mandatory restitution?
Mandatory restitution is. Yes.
Okay, so you agree on both points.
Yes, because juvenile restitution statute is more well thought out and more recent than this provision on graffiti.
Yeah.
And this would only screw up everything that was worked out in that statute.
Okay.
So we're fine with removing it from here.
Great. Okay, so again, get rid of parental liability, get rid of, and for you, you also wanted the right-of-way issue.
Financial injury?
I don't know. Yeah, did you, well, so the financial injury on the OAG comment with the...
For identity theft. Yeah, so no, PDS, just small point about how we calculate the financial injury. And so, interesting hypo of someone...
Let me just check. So that's the definitions, right? Like, right, you're going to...
Report
10.
Yeah, and so anything more on report 10, otherwise what I'd say is we go back to the definitions, and again, there was this one on financial injury that's relevant to these points, but if there's anything more on report 10 that folks want to talk about at this point...
Going back then to report 8 in connection with the definition, I think it was of, let me see if I can find it. In the definitions for property offenses, building means a structure affixed to land that is designed to contain.
Yes.
Do people mean to define that in a way so that it would exclude garages or foyers?
I'm going to exercise prerogative here, and I think we're going to have a long discussion when we get to building because people have lots of thoughts about that.
Oh, okay.
So let me book. No.
Okay.
And we'll make a note. And garages, man. We have. Yeah. Okay. Wow. That's another angle. Like, there's a lot of important stuff.
Oh, like a freestanding garage.
Well, like designed to contain versus
designed.
Right, because people live in garages, even though they may not be designed to contain humans.
But there you... Well, anyway, we're not going there.
Exactly. I know this is going to get everybody's blood up. So let's...
Not get your blood up like the definition.
Well, they're dwelling.
It's exciting. People think we don't, you know... Huh, code reform, man. This is
where it's at.
Yeah, this is where it's at. All right, so...
We're going to get t-shirts.
Yeah.
So report 8... there were some important points from OAG. Maybe wait on that a little bit too, because again, I kind of want to get to things while Janu's with us, which is so the PDS comments on Report 8 included on financial injury, right? That's where you're.
Yeah, I think deception. Yeah. You know, the materiality, we discussed that last meeting about.
What page are we? Sorry, where are we?
So now we're on the PDS comments on page.
Deceiving deception or financial injury?
We could do deception first, but I think our point was we talked about.
Oh, we talked about.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That was page 2. What we talked about.
Page 2.
Last
Page 2.
Financial injury was at page 4.
Yeah.
Number 4 on page.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Number 4 on page 4.
This is. You know,
this is
law and that interesting hypo of person
filling a gap. Is that what you
So, you know, the person is, say, the victim of identity theft, and then the trial for that identity theft, for some reason, for having an amendment issue, hires a lawyer for that purpose. And so would the cost of that lawyer be included in the financial injury? And arguably, under the revised language, it would be. But it's also not clear to us that would arguably be included under the current language, which includes all monetary costs that a person incurs as a result of another person obtaining that person's personal information. So under the revised language, if hiring an attorney for that purpose is deemed as a result of that person committing identity theft, we think it would also be covered under the current financial injury language. I don't know how to resolve.
But what if they just want a lawyer?
Well, right.
I just want one. Right. I don't have a Fifth Amendment problem. I just want one to explain to me how the criminal process works.
Absolutely. Exactly. Or what if you want 15 lawyers, right?
Right. Just to clear the debts.
And
you know,
I want them to be, you know,
finest
lawyers.
Yeah.
15 times.
Yeah. So we, when we were kind of looking, like, so Ginny's point is one, like, you know, we think we're tracking the existing statute and what we did. So, but that aside, should there be this further restriction? Okay, so whether or not we're tracking it or not, should there be a restriction on this? And I think the point is valid that, like, there has to be...
Anything you happen to do that happens to be connected to identity.
I mean, there has to be some reasonableness limits on this.
Right.
But I don't know how... The language you provide, you know, goes some way towards that, but like it still is.
But it's still even the hypo experience. Like, fine, I'm going to hire 15 of the highest priced lawyers in the country,
you know,
to help clear like my credit history or something, even though you don't really need to hire 15. You know. Should that all of that be included within the calculation of financial injury?
Yeah,
I think that's an ambiguity.
Oh, let's take out the lawyers. Fuck them.
Yeah. Well, right. So I, you know, this is, I guess this is kind of from a drafting perspective. It seems like this is written in a broad way. We've tried to mirror existing law. It seems like it's written. The language is broad enough that it could be abused. Like, I think what any judge who's like hearing this would probably be like, you know, you've got to be kidding, right? Like you went to such extreme lengths in terms of these legal fees and that you're claiming are related. I don't know how to choke it down to control that in the statute. So I think that's a very reasonable point.
How about if we say reasonable legal fees? I mean, then at least there's a...
Yeah, it's...
There's
something.
There's
something for the judge to, like...
To say, 12 lawyers for this is not... Is not it's
that's
not
right.
reasonable. I
would,
mean, that's...
Would that, you know...
Would help.
That would help? Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Well, and maybe that's...
I think that's the best you can
get it.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, on a case-by-case, they're going to have to deal with this, but, you know...
Because there may very well be places where you need a lawyer.
Exactly. That's right.
To make sure your interests are covered.
That's right.
And, you know, USL isn't always, you know, there for it.
That's
well, that's
and you
so
might feel, a victim might feel they need
well,
to.
Yes, that's why community-based advocacy groups have testified to.
Very good. All right. Well, I think that helps a little bit, you know, and if, you know, I think that would address some of these concerns, maybe in a compromised fashion. It may not be totally what PDS is wanting, right? PDS would like to see this all go away, perhaps.
Right.
You know, as you put, screw the lawyers, which, you know, to paraphrase what you said.
I think Shakespeare first.
Exactly, first, there you go. Okay, so I think with financial injury, was there anything deception covered? I think
that was it.
Okay.
Yep.
Great. Okay, so thank you for letting us kind of prioritize that a bit again. And so then, right, other issues on Report 8. We have 10 minutes left.
Dwelling.
Oh, Laura's getting
we agreed
her back.
To this. I said I would.
And dwelling ain't gonna go in 10 minutes.
Dwelling is not gonna go. I mean, dwelling. I want you guys to be able to sleep
that,
tonight,
right?
So I can't like be raising it at the last minute and get you all worked up. So okay. So
let's table dwelling for the next.
Let's. I think we're okay on time to review these. So let's go ahead and call it a meeting for today. And next time our meeting is in the morning, so, you know, it'll be a totally different thing with what everybody's like at 10 a.m.
Before lunch.
You know, we'll see. No hangriness. Who knows?
You haven't seen it.
I was going to say, it'll be a different thing. Okay. It'll be a lack of initial caffeine, whatever.
No, it's the initial caffeine.
Okay. There we go. Good. So, again, next meeting, we'll go ahead and call it meeting for today. Our next meeting is on Wednesday, what is it, January 3rd,
yeah.
10, and I'll send out an Outlook calendar invite to everybody, too, as well as a reminder about the date. Again,
when you send it, you're going to send an invite for recurring?
Yeah. Yes, to cover the 2018 dates. Okay. There might be some unusual, because we had to tweak some of them, so there might be a couple of them, but I'll send out some invites for the next year. Thank you all.
Happy birthday, everybody.
Happy holidays. There are holidays. There's lots happening. So yeah.
Lots of eggnog, I hear.
Punch bowls and eggnog.
Yeah. I love me hypotheticals.
Exactly. Yeah.
With what? Yeah. In order to.
We're not a big family.
No, us either. But like we spent three. We could spend three